This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Chain restaurants, shopping malls, and big box stores have made America's populated landscape numbingly monotonous. And there were fears that this homogenization would obliterate the unique features of Southern living. Would Southern identity survive? Two political science professors set out to test the question, and they now say the answer is yes. Christopher Cooper is one of the co-authors. He teaches at Western Carolina University. He and his co-author spoke with Southerners about the region, and they found that Southern identity may look different than before, but it is just as important as ever. Their new book is Resilience of Southern Identity, Why the South Still Matters in the Minds of Its People. Chris Cooper joins me today. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks. Great to be here.
You and your co-author are both Southerners. What made you want to look into this question?
You know, part of it was probably trying to understand ourselves. I think we both lived in the South almost all of our lives, if not all of it. I think my co-author lived like a month in Michigan. But the rest of the time we've been here and trying to make sense of this weird region that we call home and really trying to understand why we would connect to a region that for many folks is connected with so many kind of bad ideas.
Right. And then there's this question and that had been sort of dogging us for the last 50, 60, 70 years. Does any region survive the kind of corporate homogenization that we see in the mollification and big boxification of America? Was that any part of what you were looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's odd, right? If you think about it, we don't really need regional identification, or at least it seems that we wouldn't. I mean, we've got, you know, media that you can be listening to this show in China if you want to. So why on earth would people connect to region? And so we really wanted to understand that. And what we found after talking to folks is that I think this change is why the connection matters so much, right? We all want something to connect to that we think of as home and some sort of connection to our roots. And obviously that may be very different for me than from you, than from some listener. But I think all of us kind of want that connection in a world where it's harder and harder to find connections.
And you say that you found that connection is complex and often contradictory. What are you finding?
Yeah, it is, right? I mean, I think Southern identity, you know, I want to be very, very careful, and so does Gibbs, my co-author. You know, we're not trying to argue that all folks use Southern identity well or that it's always a good thing even necessarily. It is complex, and particularly if you talk to African-American Southerners who say that they're Southern and are proud to be Southern, but at the same time are trying to deal with a region that has been responsible for extraordinary suffering. So I think anybody who connects in any way as a Southern is probably a little bit conflicted by that.
Well, and then what does that mean? I mean, to take that example, mm-hmm. You know, when you see people who defend the Confederate flag as culture, not racism, right. But they're talking about an identity that certainly if you're African-American, you would not identify with. But if you're African-American and do identify as Southern, then what is that?
Yeah, and I think it is a connection to region, right? I mean, I think there's obviously a history and some roots in the South that folks have that are not necessarily connected to race or may exist despite of these poor racial connotations. I mean, the Confederate flag is obviously a great example. If you ask somebody in Connecticut, what do they think of when they think of the South? They may say the Dukes of Hazzard. They may say the Confederate flag. I think if you talk to people in the South, they'll push back on you a little. They'll say, yeah, that may be the South for some people, but it's not my South. We refer to that sort of negative view of the South and the way it's been used, Southern identification's been used to oppress is the dark side of Southern identity, right? Ways in which politicians may perhaps sometimes use this to connect to a more populist and frankly, a little bit more racist attitude.
So what were some of the tools and the methods you used to figure out what Southern identity was and why and if it mattered?
Yeah, so a couple are pretty normal and one's a little strange. So I'll talk about the normal ones first. We're political scientists, and so not surprisingly, we did some surveying, right? We called a couple of thousand folks on the phone and asked them questions. Do you still identify with the South? We asked them questions about why. We do ask them some questions about the Confederate flag. We then followed up with folks in person in focus groups. So we actually sat down with separate groups of white Southerners and African-American Southerners and tried to get them to describe to us in a lot more detail why they would identify with the South. Those are the ones that I think folks might see coming. The third way is we actually look at business names. So we take a look at business names that have the word Southern in them and business names that have the word Dixie in them. And we stole this, cited, I promise, from a UNC sociologist named John Shelton Reed, who did this in the 1970s. And we compare our data about business names to Reed's. What we find is that Dixie businesses, or sort of the idea of the South as measured by Dixie, has gotten way smaller. It really is that form of Southern identity is shrinking and disappearing, and it's in very, very few places now. Southern identity, however, is strong and perhaps even stronger than it used to be, right? So there is a clear negative connotation. If I call my business Dixie Bicycle Shop, not a lot of folks are going to want to shop there, but if I call it Southern Bicycle Shop, it's possible that I'm connecting to part of the region that folks feel more positively about.
And there's a suggestion that people that you know as a bicycle shop owner, that this is a positive thing, that people do want to connect to their Southern identity and not something you should have to run away from.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, in some ways, business names are a great way to understand public opinion. Business owners are smart. They're not going to name themselves something that excludes a large segment of their market. And so if they are calling themselves Southern in at least as large numbers as they used to, that's another sign, again, of the resilience of Southern identity.
So when you talk about the things that people identify with, I guess it wouldn't surprise me if people started with food. Is that what you found?
Yeah, we did. You know, so especially when you ask people in focus groups questions about food, well, you get some really animated answers. I think we expected to get these answers about politics and these kind of deep things. But if you ask folks, what does it mean to be Southern? They often start with food, right? They will talk about barbecue. They do talk about cornbread. They do talk about some of these traditional Southern staples. And when we look at survey data, what we find is that Black and white Southerners actually have sort of more similar taste palates, if you will, than white Southerners and white non-Southerners do.
And along those lines, you pulled out some examples of well-known people who identify strongly as Southerners but really don't have much else in common.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we start the book with this sort of four vignettes of some folks, like Paula Deen, right? I mean, he's obviously somebody who has made a name on her. She would argue Southern heritage, but certainly Southern identity. And her particular view of it has obviously gotten herself into all sorts of trouble. At the same time, we profile a guy like Patterson Hood, who's the lead singer of a band called the Drive-By Truckers. And, you know, this is a band that is a white band, but that is tours around with Black Lives Matter on their stage. And they're a very explicitly Southern band. We look at a person like Jim Clyburn, African-American member of Congress from South Carolina, who definitely describes himself as a Southerner. And so we think that's kind of one interesting puzzle of Southern identity. You take somebody like Paula Deen, you take somebody like Jim Clyburn, and you say, what on earth would these folks have in common, yet both do identify as Southern?
What, are they identifying with different elements of the South? What is it that – what's the tie that binds?
I think they are, right? I think these are – there's not a monolithic South and there's not a monolithic Southern, right? To be Southern, if you're Jim Clyburn, it's probably very different than to be Southern, obviously, if you're Paula Deen. But there are some commonalities, right? So there's some differences, there's some commonalities. And when you talk to people one-on-one, I think you'll find that they're connecting in slightly different ways to the region. Everybody seems to be a little bit conflicted, but the nature of that conflict varies across people.
What about the changes over time? And I'm thinking too that there was this phenomenon called the New South, if you remember that, and back in the 1980s, and I think a city like Atlanta would typify that. And it was about pushing back against the narrative. It was really looking northward and saying, here's what you used to think of us. We're not that anymore. We've got Thai restaurants and ballet and all sorts of things that you would associate. But it seemed to me that the New South meant we're not the Old South. So it meant running away from barbecue and fried chicken and looking more cosmopolitan. And that kind of changed in cities like Durham and Asheville and other places that said, no, we're all about the bacon fat. That's what makes it. We love biscuits when we're in the South.
That's right.
That seems to have changed over that 10 or 20-year period.
No, I think you're absolutely right, right? So Atlanta called itself the city that was too busy to hate, right? So I think there was a time where Atlanta and some of the more progressive Southern cities did try to run away from the South. And I think they're running back to it. And I think, again, restaurants are a great example of that. So talking to you in Asheville here, and if I throw a rock, I could probably hit 10 different restaurants that call themselves Southern in some way, shape, or form. That was not true 15, 20 years ago in the city of Asheville, in Durham, in Atlanta, in Birmingham, or elsewhere.
Right. So, so again, it's a definitely an identity in flux, and it strikes me that people are embracing at least some of the more interesting parts of the culture. Sadly, though, some of the other, the darker sides are coming back. We're seeing discriminatory legislation here in North Carolina, voter ID laws meant to discriminate against African Americans, and we're seeing that in other Southern cities as well. Is there a bad? I mean, so it took a while for Southern states to convince, you know, the rest of the country that they weren't all that they weren't this racist, you know, as you thought. Mm-hmm. And now it's coming back, and I'm wondering what the national perception is and whether or not you ever survive that once you, especially if you relapse.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. You know, my sense from the data we have, though, is that attitudes about the South have improved, right? So if we take sort of survey data from the 1970s to the present, attitudes about – you just ask folks on a survey, do you like Southerners? And you ask them about all sorts of other groups. Do you like unions? Do you like business owners? This kind of thing. Southerners have increased – people's attitudes about Southerners have increased more than any of these other groups. And what's really interesting to me is the largest increase has occurred amongst African Americans. So not surprisingly, in the early 70s, African Americans did not feel very positively about the South, in the South or outside of the South. Today, if you look at non-Southerners, African American non-Southerners are way more likely to have positive attributes they associate with the region, even than non-Southern whites. So will that be changing after things like HB2? I don't know. I mean, I think this is a larger sweep of history that I imagine folks are recognizing the South, just like the North, is a heterogeneous region with folks with positive and negative attributes.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out, because there was actually a net migration back to among African Americans back to the South as the South began to embark on more progressive policies that invited not only African Americans to return home, but also businesses and corporations that relied on diversity for their lifeblood. Now, when we see sort of anti-diversity legislation passed, cutting out corporations who can't possibly move here because of these discriminatory policies, it'd be interesting to see whether we're sort of at this crossroads right now, and hopefully things wouldn't turn back. What about the influx of Hispanic population as well? Because that's been an important demographic shift.
Yeah, it has been extremely important, and it's one that I think we would really like to deal with better, frankly, than we do in the book. It's hard to get some of these data, but I would imagine that if we're ever able to do another edition of this book, I would really – my co-author Gibbs and I would both like to explore how Hispanics do struggle with Southern identity, right? So we can think about somebody who's in what we might call an assimilated Southerner. John Shelton Reed calls it this. What makes somebody assimilate as a Southerner? What makes somebody hold a couple of different identities present at the same time? And I think Hispanics are such a great example of that. And what's happening with Hispanic communities in the South is going to be a fascinating thing to study.
Also, the question of, again, what others think of the South. You're teaching up in the mountains, and I think there's a tendency in regions outside the South to conflate mountain culture with Southern culture. And, of course, there are a variety of Southern cultures, whether you're in the Piedmont, the Deep South, and all of that. But I wonder if there is still that idea among others, and if you had any way to sort this out, that conflates mountain culture and Southern culture, or sees it as monolithic.
Yeah, I think, look, folks do hold multiple identities at the same time. And you know, we know that from all sorts of, again, surveys that we've done. We'll just kind of ask folks in this 23 westernmost counties in North Carolina, do you identify with the Southern as a Southerner? Do you identify with the Appalachian region? We'll kind of work through these other possible identities. And people can and do hold on to multiple identities at the same time. So you're right. What it means and feels to be Southern in Asheville versus in Durham are different, right? You guys are still eating that vinegar-based barbecue stuff, and we're obviously eating the good stuff up here. So we do see differences. There is not a Southern culture. There are definitely Southern cultures, and I think folks do hold multiple identities.
And, of course, politicians are not blind to this, and they continue to use it. Is it still important in political circles and political rhetoric to make reference to something called Southern culture, Southern identity?
I think it absolutely is, right? And you see this with again, folks of a lot of different races. If you kind of look at the way campaigns are run in the South and campaigns are run elsewhere, there's a lot of similarities in voter contact and things like this, but the rhetoric does shift. Politicians really want to show that they are like us. And one way to show that they are like us is to connect with the region in some real outward ways. And I think we have seen that with politicians. I think we will continue to see that with politicians. Bill Clinton obviously campaigned in a lot of ways as a Southerner when he ran for office. Some folks thought that made him feel more authentic. I'm not really sure if that's true or not. But I think it was a different kind of campaign than he would have run had he been from Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, also he was. This was his way of countering the Southern strategy that the Republicans had been so successful for. So at least he had one foot in that camp. But so for you, you talked about the personal reasons, you know, kind of exploring your own identity. Did it change your sense of what it means to be Southern?
You know, I think it did. I think it made me take more seriously some things that maybe I didn't think were so high-minded, right? I mean, I can be as snarky as the next fellow, maybe more so. And so, you know, when people said, oh, Southern identity is really about, you know, biscuits and barbecue, and I would think, you know, no, let's talk about the deep issues. Let's talk about politics. Let's talk about race. Let's talk about, you know, culture in other ways. I think what I've realized is that these are real for people. These are authentic. These are ways that people connect, that things like food and music to some degree can bring folks closer together. So I think it's made me appreciate the kind of daily churn of life more and why people need that and why people need that to be distinct.
Chris Cooper, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Chris Cooper is co-author of the new book, The Resilience of Southern Identity, Why the South Still Matters in the Minds of People. And thank you for joining us on that program. Thanks for listening. You can find out more about the book at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is the technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.